The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
It was probably one of the best-kept secrets in the WWE in quite a while. AJ Styles' surprise debut at the Royal Rumble. How did it go down? How did he sneak into the venue? What does he think about the WWE now that he's officially on the roster? How did he get there? We're talking about all of those things and about his two-year run in New Japan Pro Wrestling as a member of the Super Over Bullet Club and as the New Japan World Champion. I also turned him on to DDP Yoga as well. You hear about how that's doing for his performances. AJ is a DDP Yoga believer. AJ is in the WWE stronger and better than ever after Diamond Dallas Page hooked him up with his amazing program. And this is real. AJ will tell you all about it. And I'm telling you all about it. If you give DDP Yoga a try, you'll be a believer too. You're a believer. And then you saw his face. Dun, 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 dun. You're a believer. It's a little monkeys for you. If you take advantage of the great deal on DDP Yoga at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, you'll get hooked up with 3 free months of the new amazing DDP Yoga Now app. I think it's the app I'm using the most on my phone right now. It's so well done, so well crafted. I gave it a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you go download it, you'll see I'm not the only one giving it such great ratings, a perfect rating. DDP has a monster on his hands. An Android version of the app works as well. And you can get that at the Google Play Store. The best thing about the app is that I can get all the workouts right here on my phone. That means I don't have to lug around the DVDs or the special DVD player to hook into my laptop, since DVDs are almost non-existent at this point. All the workouts are right on the app, and the app has live workouts from the brand spanking new DDP Yoga Performance Center in Atlanta, GA. It's got recipes, nutrition guides. You can watch some live cooking shows. You can earn rewards within the app and redeem them for some cool prizes and DDP Yoga merch even. The more workouts you do, the more points you get, the more merch you get. It is easy. You guys know how much DDP and DDP Yoga did for me and now for AJ Styles. You know how much it really works. This is not some kind of a spin job. It actually works. And that's why Dallas wants to give you a great deal as well, so you get into it and get into a better space in your life. And you'll get the best price on DDP Yoga right here at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And then if you purchase DDP Yoga at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, you'll get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. You need this thing. Get started on DDP Yoga today. One of the best decisions you can make for your health and for your quality of life. Take advantage of the special offer and get the lowest price for DDP Yoga. And once again, 3 free months of access to the DDP Yoga Now app. You want to go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and do it now. Change your life. Get started today. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. This really works.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right. So, huge surprise last week. AJ Styles finally in the WWE. And it's a pretty exciting time for the locker room. I mean, how are you feeling so far after 1 week?
I would say it's more exciting for me than the locker room. And what a locker room it is, man. Honestly, I had to ask myself once I got home from being here, did I get too comfortable too fast? Mm-hmm. Because the locker room was just so cool to me, you know. So I was like, oh, maybe I should apologize to these guys, because literally I was just goofing off with the guys. You know, some of them I knew, some of them I didn't, but it was like I've known them for years.
Yeah. You hear that too about, like, you know, about how the locker room is or in different places, but we have a really great, like you said, group of guys here. And then 10, 15 years ago, maybe not the case, but now everyone really is straight up.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times, at least places that I've worked before, a lot of people felt, oh, this guy's coming here to take my spot.
Right.
You know, and they were just, you know, it was a problem. It was hard to fit in sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that I went through a lot of that, but there's none of that here.
Was it hard, too? Because I noticed last week I saw you when you came in. You kind of came into the area we were going over the Rumble match. And you walked in kind of like very humble. But I was like, it's almost like you're the new kid in school.
Absolutely.
And you saw a couple people that you knew, but you just kind of quietly went. And I could see on your face, you're just like, here we go.
Yep. That's exactly the way it was. I mean, because, you know, you don't want to come in there and just like, hey, what's up, guys? I'm AJ. You know, I don't want to do that. But I was so thankful there were people there that I knew and people that, you know, I enjoyed working with. And so I made sure they knew that these guys who work for you also like me too. So this, I mean, you're in good hands, you know.
Yeah.
So it was definitely an experience because we're going to hide out the whole day. And they go, well, listen, the fact of the matter is you got to go. We got to go over this.
Mm-hmm.
So there sat everybody, you know, that, you know, a lot of guys I didn't know. So I was nervous. I
mean,
I'm coming into someone else's house, and it's not just a house. It's a mansion here. You know, mm-hmm. It's somebody's mansion. A lot of guys have made up this great mansion. You know, and I'm coming into their house and hoping to be part of this family.
Yeah,
it's a little intimidating.
And I think too, it's not like if you came in and you were like having a match with, you know, one person or a tag team match, that you're in there with like there's 30 guys and there's, you know, Michael Hayes and Jamie Noble and the agents are all there. Here you go, your first time there, and you have to kind of ingratiate yourself with everybody at once.
Right. And then, you know, there's certain things going on with everybody. Everybody wants to, you know, get their stuff in and stuff. And I want to be the guy that helps get their stuff in, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you got to be also a little bit protective over yourself. But yeah, if you watch it back, you'll go, well, okay, AJ, you were in there a little bit too much, doing a little bit too much, you know, getting tossed around maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. You know, I want those guys to know that I'm willing to get after it with them and have a good time over here.
Well, and I think that, too. I think, you know, when you watch it back, I think the idea as well, like we talked about, people are going to be excited to see you. And it should be about you for a certain amount of the time because the spotlight is on you as this new guy. You have to come out with a bang, you know?
Well, I mean, I definitely got my stuff in. Thank you for letting me get in the springboard forearm in. You know, and then I saw some openings. But sometimes, you know, you just got to wait your turn, mm-hmm. you know? And that's what I did on a couple of those things. And you know what? For what it was worth, I thought was, you know, awesome for me. You know, I mean, who would have expected what happened, how those fans reacted, because I certainly didn't, mm-hmm. you know, but it did make me feel a lot better because I was like, I hope they know me when I walk out, and they did.
Because that's the thing, like, you know, your headline Tokyo Dome shows and you're the top guy in Ring of Honor and around the world overseas, but here you never know for sure, like, how many of those fans that watch New Japan Wrestling are going to be sitting in the crowd in, you know, Orlando, Florida.
Right. I think, but, you know, when you talk about the Royal Rumble, you got a lot of hardcore fans,
mm-hmm.
just as you know, it's WrestleMania, you know.
Right.
SummerSlam. People are definitely going to, you know, the hardcore fans are definitely going to know anybody new who comes in. That's just the way it is. So it was the perfect place for me to start mm-hmm. in the Royal Rumble. It was perfect for me, and I'm very thankful.
Tell us about that day. Like, how far in advance did you know you'd be debuting at the Rumble?
A couple days, actually. It's that week I got, you're on the Rumble. And I was like, oh, here we go. This is great for me. And I even joked around thinking, oh, I'll go number two. No problem, guys. I'll just do number two. And the fact when they said you're number three was perfect.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't be any happier with what I wanted. I mean, but the month prior to all this, my head was spinning because I didn't know what was next, if it was going to happen. You know, didn't get any sleep, you know, because this is your career.
Right.
And it couldn't have happened any better. Literally, I mean, nothing but great things to say.
Because you're taking like a big step too, because once again, and I'm not saying this, you know, for you to be bashful about it, but you're like a top guy. Like, headlining the Tokyo Dome is a massive thing, especially for a foreigner, for Gaijing in Japan. So you're taking a big chance, a leap of faith to go from this place where you are a legit main event title holding champion to basically starting from scratch again in a lot of ways.
Literally, I have to, you know, start over again here mm-hmm. because despite what people may say, and I appreciate them, you know, putting my accolades right. out there and stuff like that. But, you know, I have to show the WWE universe that, you know, what I can do here in mm-hmm. WWE. That's what it's all about now. But, you know, I'm up for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So
I always say, like, when guys get over somewhere. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, in the proverbial bingo hall or if it's at the Tokyo Dome. When you get over, you always know how to get over in different places. It just might take a while to figure out the different little nuances, but you've figured it out everywhere else. So it seems like you'd do the same here.
Well, it's going to take time just like anything else, right? It's all about experience. And so I just got to get a little bit more experience here. I know I don't have a lot of time to do that, but I think I'm, you know, going to be able to make that happen. You know, just if I were a betting man, I'd bet on myself. I always have. And I've done all right.
Now, being a professional for as long as you have, I'm sure you've been studying and watching. What are some of the differences that you've noticed right off the bat in the WWE?
Well, I can tell you what I was worried about right off the bat. Was I haven't been in a WWE ring since 2002.
Right.
And so I was pretty nervous about this because the ropes that I remember weren't as tight as those ropes are now.
Yeah.
So when we talked about, I'll throw you over, and so I thought, I may really go out of this ring, you know, because I have no idea. And am I going to be able to springboard? Because before, you never know. That was what I was most nervous about. And I thought I'd be thrown off about how the size of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But New Japan's ring is pretty much the same thing.
Maybe about 20 by 20,
aren't they? This may be a little bit bigger, but not so much,
right?
That it'd make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and that's pretty much it. I mean, you're a little bit further away from the fans. You know, usually seems like they're a little bit closer on everything else I've been to, where you had to worry about hitting the guardrail if you went over the top rope.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, here you don't have to worry about that. And depending on what venue you're in as well, when it comes to New Japan, you know, that was a thing. So, but yeah, other than that, there's not that big a difference.
What about the ropes?
Well, the real ropes, as you know, where I'm so used to cables, but these ropes are pretty tight, and you get an extra spring from these ropes, I feel like. I was concerned about them, as I told you before, so I came from the corner when I went to springboard up.
But right.
I'm confident that I can come from the middle, which makes things a lot easier, you know, moving around in the ring.
Yeah, all it takes is one time to figure it out, and then you got it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you didn't have a chance to go in the ring and bounce around because you were hiding.
None at all. So you can understand why I might be worried about the ring.
Were you in the hiding in the bus, or did you have to – where were you that day beforehand?
I was hiding in the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a car pick me up in Tampa, so I didn't even fly into Orlando.
Gotcha, yeah.
So then, you know, drove around and got here. You know, I saw people as I was moving, you know, driving up to Orlando, so I had lay down in the back seat so nobody could see me, and then we finally got in there and got into a trailer, and I met a couple people. But then soon after, like I said before, there's no more hiding. We got to get you in here.
Yeah,
you know.
But it didn't leak, as far as I know. Like AJ Styles is backstage,
which is a credit.
Yes,
to the boys in the back,
right?
Because they knew I was there,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they didn't say anything. And you know, so you know, the fact that they can keep their mouth shut, a lot of guys cannot do it.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
So those guys did a really good job, man. They didn't leak it.
It just adds to the whole ambiance and surprise element. You know, it's so much more fun that way.
Right.
If people don't legitimately know.
Well, and the thing was is that, you know, there was all that speculation where is AJ's going to be at the Rumble. You know, everybody's like, oh, he's going to be at the Rumble. I'm telling you, he's going to be at the Rumble.
Yeah.
But you didn't know if I were going to be there.
Sure.
There was that little bit of doubt, and that's a great thing. It's not a bad thing that people suspected that I may be there. You know, I think it actually made it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, number three was a perfect spot for me to come out because it was early enough.
It creates a whole buzz on top of the match having a buzz anyways. You know what I mean?
Royal Rumble, absolutely.
Yeah. I did that in 2013. I came back, same thing as you, hid in the bus and came out to do the meeting. And I was the same thing. Like, I felt so naked, oh, some worker's going to see me, or, you know, some guy hanging the lights or whatever. And nobody said a word. And I was Googling, because I went back to the bus after, and I was Googling right until the Rumble started. Did anyone see me? And no one announced it. And it just became this great, honest, shocking surprise. Which just adds to it.
Which doesn't happen much anymore.
Right.
So, man, it was awesome. It was awesome.
Was it hard? And I know, because I had the Young Bucks, and they were talking about how that they didn't really hear from you. Was it hard having,
kayfabe
your friends?
I couldn't say anything. And everybody wants to, it wasn't just your friends. It was your family, you know, because I was like, listen, you guys couldn't tell. You know, no matter what I say, they're still going to tell their friend, their closest friend, So I couldn't tell anybody. So I was just like, I even told my kids, listen, you know, Dad doesn't know if he's working there yet, so don't you say anything. And my wife had told me a story that my oldest son went and told a buddy and one of his close friends that my dad's working for WWE before the Rumble. And he told his mom, she says, you know you can't tell him. He goes, yeah. The next day he went and told his best friend that he was lying. You know? So I really appreciate that.
How old is he?
He's 10.
Oh, yeah. You get that, though. I had that at my house, too. So you guys can't say anything. And my wife's like, well, who are they going to tell? You know, who their friend's going to tell? Like, I don't know. Their friend might read the sheets or read the internet nowadays.
Well, my son is so involved in sports, and so many dads know what I do for a living. I could see him telling his friend telling his dad. And it just gets around. You're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
I could see that happen.
Were guys asking you about it?
Yeah. I had guys who I had talked to for years.
Right.
Hey, congratulations. I'm like, I'm not texting that guy back.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
You can't. My wife's Facebook. Everybody's wanting to be her friend on Facebook now. You know, all this stuff. It was unbelievable.
How about like your close friends, though? Like your close buds? Would they cross that line, or would they just kind of let you?
They knew.
Right.
You know, and I'll be honest with you. You know, if it were my closest friends, you know, we talked about it. You know, so yeah, everybody does, right? But you can trust them not to say anything. I almost needed to tell somebody, you know, my wife wasn't enough.
Right.
I had to tell somebody.
But you don't want to cross the line. Like, I know, like for example, I'm friends with Slash, and when the Guns N' Roses reunion was brewing, I never asked him. I still talked to him all the time, like, about whatever, but I didn't want to say, so tell him, like, dude, I'll let every other guy ask you
right.
that, and I'll just sit back.
Right. And I, the guys who were, you know, my friends that were close to me, they didn't ask.
Yeah.
Some of my close friends somehow already knew that were already in the WWE. It was so hard keeping that a secret. I was relieved when it was over.
You told me that, yeah.
I was so like, oh, thank God. Hey, guys, guess what? I do work for WWE. Thank God.
So WWE told you not to say anything, keep it secret.
We were just going to keep this, you know, hush-hush, kayfabe a little bit, you know. But I appreciate that. It was what made the Royal Rumble great.
We still believe in surprises here as much as possible.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great television.
That's what it should be.
Absolutely.
You know?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So tell us about the road that led you here, because the last time we spoke is right when you left TNA, and you were kind of going off into the wilderness, although you already had a big name on the, you know, Ring of Honor, Indies and stuff, but you had mentioned that WWE hadn't really called you or hadn't really sent out any feelers, so you went over to Japan and suddenly became this huge name.
And again, I had to start over in New Japan, because here was a couple guys who really didn't know me that well. I knew Okada, who was a big name over there, and Tanahashi, because I wrestled him before. But other than that, I really didn't know too many people. Of course, some of the guys in, I knew, with the Young Bucks and some of the guys in the Bullet Club. But, you know, it was a nervous feeling when the guy comes in, a new guy comes in, and immediately gets pushed. Literally after I won the IWGP heavyweight title, a couple of us from the Bullet Club, you know, because when you're in Japan, it's very much a secret, you know, what goes on. And so we were all...
You mean behind the scenes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we were all riding together, and we got out getting, you know, about to go in the hotel, and I said, listen, guys, I had to stop them and tell them, like, I know how this feels, that this guy gets the rocket pushed up his butt, and here you guys have been here for a long time. And I said, everything that we do from here on out is about us, not about me. It's about us. And I just want you guys to know that I'm on your team, that I'm not trying to stab each other, you know, somebody in the back to get to the next level. I want this to be about us.
Us as in the other foreign guys, or as in the whole company?
The foreign, well, specifically the Bullet Club. Because I didn't want to feel like I was pushing them out of the scene to make myself bigger. But I wanted us to grow as the, you know, as that team together, you know. And at the same time, though, what good is a company if everybody doesn't look good in it, you know?
Right.
So I wanted the guys to know that I was wrestling, that, hey, let's tear the house down. Let's do what we got to do to make this a bigger company.
Let's talk about the Bullet Club a little bit. Like, I obviously know the name and I know a little bit about it, but it became a really big faction, like NWO level of popularity.
Right. I mean, I'm not exactly sure when it took off or how it took off. I know that Devitt was our
Finn.
Finn, yeah.
Finn Balor.
Yeah, it was a big part of that to start it up, and then he left and came to the WWE, which is I came in the night that he was leaving.
Oh, wow.
So, and I remember standing up and saying, they asked me to say something, which was awkward, you know, because I just got there. But, that, you know, I respected him for taking the challenge, you know, to come here and you know, never looking back. But then, you know, we all kind of started this thing, and they were already kind of too sweet in each other and telling people to suck it and stuff like that, you know.
But it's the Young Bucks. It's you.
Young Bucks, me, Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, Yujiro, Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, Kenny Omega.
Okay. That was your gang.
Yep.
So all foreign guys.
All foreign guys except for one, Yujiro.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the only one. But it worked, you know, because we were worried about it getting too big at first. And then we're like, okay, no, this actually works. You know, everybody had their own place doing their own thing, and it all worked. And we all were friends. We all enjoyed hanging out with each other. You know, it only got bad when they were in Japan and I wasn't, and the group text was going off at 3 a.m. in the morning. You know?
Right. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon there.
Yeah. I'm like, stop.
So, but you guys made a pretty big name for yourself. As were you heels there? Did you eventually
become babyfaces? We were heels. We tried to be heels. But you know how much they respect great wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as they were seeing some athletic, you know, unbelievable wrestling, they're supposed to hate you, and they try to hate you, but I don't think they really do, you know, despite who you are. As long as they're entertained, they're going to cheer you. And, you know, that's a great thing, though.
Sure.
I'm not mad about that because we were able to sell a lot of shirts. I was able to sell some gloves. You know, there was good things that happened there.
So were you brought in there, of course – you never get the guarantee, but were you brought in there knowing that you were going to be going for the world title or be in that picture?
I didn't know when I was coming over that's exactly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to tell you the truth, I was a little shocked because I probably would have never done that. If it were my company, I would never have done that.
Put the title on you?
I would never – this new guy coming in, that who knows if people know who he is, and put the strap on him right away. I mean – you know, what am I saying about my own company if some foreign guy can come in here?
Did you win it that quickly?
Literally, I came in, beat up Okada, and, you know, showed the people that I was going to win this world. Next match I had in New Japan was for the IWGP title.
Okay.
And we cheated, of course.
Yeah.
And I won. And the people were shocked.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, it doesn't get much quicker than that, you know, to be their IWGP heavy. And for me, at that time, it was the most prestigious title in the world because I watched New Japan Pro Wrestling. I watched you, you know, wrestle in New Japan. So I always had a great deal of respect for that company because I enjoyed the wrestling too.
Right.
You know, so for me, to win that title was unbelievable.
But once again, I mean, not too many foreigners have ever won that title. And the ones that did were monsters like Scott Norton, Vader had it.
Bob Sapp,
right?
Brock Lesnar, you know?
Those are 300-pound guys.
Yeah.
And you're not 300 pounds, let's say.
not even close,
right. So to put the title on you was from a pure wrestling, entertaining, amazing match standpoint, not because of your size in the least.
That's it. I mean, basically everything, you know, when people would have interviews, that would always come up, that these guys were so much bigger and you're not exactly. I said, well, you know what? Neither was Mike Tyson. But he did pretty well.
That's a great point. Yeah.
So I always kind of referred myself as the Mike Tyson of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it's something you could actually even use here in the WWE because as you see, you walk around. I mean, it's the land of the giants,
big guys for sure.
You know, you can see that just like, oh my gosh, you forget just how, like, guys like Big Show, for example. We see him every day, and you walk past the guy sometimes. And go, holy smokes, this guy's huge.
Yeah, you know, you're around some of these guys so much, they become smaller.
Yeah.
Well, they're not that much bigger than me, but when someone sees you behind them, I'm like, oh my God, they're enormous. I'm like, yeah, he's kind of big, I guess.
Right. You know? Were there some guys that you'd never met before that you just met over the last couple weeks?
The Wyatts, you know, I never met those guys before.
All those guys are massive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't even think about
it. Huge guys.
Yeah.
You know, a couple guys like let's see, there wasn't a ton of guys that I met, but Ryback, I say that, but I saw him in the airport. We just said hello together.
Who was that?
Ryback.
Okay.
You know, Ryback, yeah. So I kind of knew him, and it was friendly to him then. So
right.
I guess now as you think about it, I guess I've been here, you know, I went to WWE before and you know, had dark matches and whatnot. So there are some guys I'd met before, not that they would remember me, but I guess there's very few that I haven't met in passing, I guess.
Okay. I remember you had a dark match maybe, I think we might have talked about this last time, it was Columbia, South Carolina or something like that, Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah.
One of those arenas where the hotel's right next to it. I remember seeing you there.
I think, I want to say I wrestled Hurricane the night before that.
Okay.
And I can't remember who I wrestled. Oh, man. I hate myself for not being able to remember who I wrestled next.
You've had some dark matches. You flirted with this company for years.
Yes.
But never got in.
Well, you know, I mean, I had the opportunity before, you know, in 2002, but it was just so – it was bad timing.
Right.
I'm sure we talked about this
before. Yeah, that's right. You told me. It was like low-level deal. And
not that I didn't want it.
Sure.
You know, just – I was in college. My wife, you know, it was her dream, you know, and
that's right. Yeah,
you know, it was hard. It was a hard decision to make, but everything happened for a reason. I really believe that I had to go other places to get to this point in my life. I really believe that, and I wouldn't have changed anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, because like you said, if you're going to 2002 AJ Styles and 2016 AJ Styles, like everybody knows who you are and knows the quality of performances that you're giving. So I'm sure that's filtered back to the powers that be here, which is why they picked up the phone and called you when they didn't a year and a half or 2 years ago.
Sure. I mean,
whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. You know, I'd let them know that, you know, after, you know, I'd worked for the other company that I was ready and free and ready to go and nothing happened. So I went to New Japan and, you know, did well there. And I think that had a lot to do with just, like you said, with why I'm here now.
Right. So when you got the call, was it reaching out to see if you're available or was it like...
I got to tell you the truth. I was kind of talking with a friend and just kind of let them know that, you know, I'm not on any contract whatsoever, you know, and if there's some money to be made, I do not want to leave that left on the table. You know, I enjoy where I'm at and I like what I'm doing, but, you know, there's another challenge there too. So I just kind of threw it out there and just see if anything was happening. And then slowly but surely, the ball started rolling a little bit more. And then, holy crap, it was moving so fast, it was hard to keep up.
Right.
You know, to the point where it was hard to sleep at night. You know, so, you know, so I guess I reached out, but, you know, they were more receptive this time.
They were ready for it.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, too. And we haven't seen them yet. And you know, it's wherever they end up, if they end up here or whatever, but it was you and it was Gallows and Anderson and Nakamura all left at once.
Yeah, that was a tough day.
Was it hard?
Yeah. It was a tough day because, you know, we're going to have to come up and tell New Japan who we really love those guys for what they've done for us and the way they've treated us. Say, well, all three of us are going.
Mm-hmm.
We're all leaving. And I knew that Nakamura had just told them as well maybe a week prior.
Right.
And so putting them through that was really difficult. And it was really emotional, you know.
Was it Gato that you talked to?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Gato and Tiger, you know.
Tiger, yeah.
We'll let them know. And it was just hard. You know, it's just hard, man, to say, hey, listen, thank you for so much. Thank you so much for all you've done for us. But we got to leave. You know, that's really hard. But, you know, they were so professional and everything they did and thanked us. And I can't say enough great things about what they, you know, done for us and the way they treated us as we were leaving. You know, those guys are finishing it up. You know, Nakamura is on his way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was a pleasure working for him, you know.
Well, and that's the thing, too, though. I mean, they have to know deep down inside that, you know, you're American. You know, you need to work in this country. I mean, it's great in Japan. I love Japan. I've been there 60-odd times, but towards the end of being there, you don't want to be over in Japan all the time. It's a hard grind.
Well, you got a family, too.
And yeah, so, now, for sure.
That scares me the most. What if something happened and I couldn't get home?
Right.
That scared me to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was a big reason that I wanted to come home, is mm-hmm. that so that I could be there for my family and the opportunity to wrestle here, of course.
Of course.
So it was a hard decision, but at the same time, you know, everything that I do now is for my family.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a certain amount of time frame to do this. You know, it's not like we're in the Rolling Stones and we can do this when we're 75. So you have to take the opportunities, the best ones, to prepare for that.
Right, and the opportunities here are so great. And I'm not just talking about getting in there and being on every show. I'm not just talking about that. But what about when it's over, when the wrestling part is over? Is there an opportunity to be an agent, a trainer, or something here?
Sure.
You know, I do enjoy wrestling. I love everything about it. You know, so to be a part of it would be a great thing for me, you know, to have a job doing something
beyond
else.
Yeah. The ring. Yeah. Was there ever any talk of you going to NXT first, or did you say like no need for that?
Well, Now listen, I never said anything, but I was sure I was really relieved when they said you don't have to go that route. But you know, I don't know if things would have been different if that was the route I had to go. Mm-hmm. You know, to be honest with you, because you know, of New Japan, and at the same time I was wrestling for Ring of Honor, and both
sure.
were working together, so that you got one contract with this company and one contract with another. So that's a pretty good living.
Sure.
So it's a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
You know. But that's still a pretty good living.
Yeah, you and the Young Bucks and Del Rio were the three acts. I'm sure there's others, but to me, they're like making really, really good living for yourself and not being here, which is rare, but it proved that you can do it.
Right, right. You know? I mean, and that was the thing, is that, you know, I wasn't sure, you know, what the future held, you know, for me. I was a little scared, you know, mm-hmm. but again, I bet on myself and said, I'm going to make this thing work. I'm going to find a way. And lo and behold, things happen
sure.
in a great way for me.
And being on the outside looking in and being in this company for as long as I have, it's a big deal to me, and to I'm sure you're figuring out that you didn't have to go to NXT, because everybody has to go through that system now. It's almost like a must.
Right.
Because also, too, they're pulling big numbers, and then they're doing arenas now. They need all the names they can get. So the fact you came straight here to me shows that there's some idea about what you bring to the table.
Oh, I guess that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure. But and I'm not saying I'm above NXT.
No, I'm not saying that either.
You know,
I'm not saying that either.
Those guys are great down there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them that will be moving up soon. There's no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe timing was an issue. There's a lot of guys hurt right now. And I think that might have something to do with that.
Good
could
point.
Be wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever was going to happen, I was going to make the best of it. And, you know, whether I stayed in New Japan or went to NXT or actually came here, you know, mm-hmm. whatever happened, I was going to make the best of it.
Let's talk a little bit about Nakamura. I know a lot about him as far as his reputation, but I haven't seen a lot of his actual work. But charisma-wise, he's got a great persona.
Overflowing with charisma. And, you know, the guy used to do a little bit of MMA, so he knows a lot about that. But he's also, you know, he's his own character. I mean, you've never seen anything like this guy unless you refer to Michael Jackson. And, you know, and to see him in the ring, it's just like, wow, this guy's so good. And he speaks English. I told you that
before. You heard me say that. Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big thing. And he's just a pleasure to be in the ring with. He's very mature. You know, he's not this guy who's just thinking about himself. He's thinking about the match or whatever needs to be done. It's a great guy.
So you mentioned like Michael Jackson. Does he dance, or does he have
He just has mannerisms as Mike does. You know, he does little Michael Jackson things and it gets over, you know. So, but it makes him so different than everybody else.
Sure,
nobody's doing Michael Jackson stuff, and I think it's going to get over with the crowd. His work alone will get over easily, and to throw in his little spices of Michael Jackson, you know.
And I mean, that's a huge chance that he's taking. You know, like you came here, but you are American. You live here. Like he's coming all the way over from Japan. He's really throwing it all on the line.
Yeah, I mean, and you're talking about a guy that went through the dojo. In New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Right.
And so that's, you know how big that is. And for
yeah.
him to take a step and come over here to America, just like you said, but I don't think people realize, you know, when you work and go through a dojo, you have a job for life there. Like you're
that's
one
right.
of their
oh,
guys.
Yeah.
You're one of their boys, and
yeah.
they'll take care of you no matter what. And for him to say, you know what, I really like to challenge myself over in America with WWE, it's huge.
It's huge that they took him, too, because we haven't seen, you know, a Japanese superstar here. I always think, you know, Great Muta is the template.
Yes.
He came over here, became a huge star here, and then stayed a huge star in Japan. But, yeah, I mean, that's taking a real shot.
Yeah, well, you know, and he's not your typical... you know, everybody. You know how everybody refers to, oh, the Japanese, they're small. Well, I got news for you. That isn't exactly how it is over there. I'm still, you know, they have big Japanese guys over there, too.
Oh, yeah.
And Nakamura's not small. you know, and everything he does is like you said, it's so much charisma, and it's just, you got to see it. I mean, if you haven't seen Nakamura, you got to see it to go, wow, this guy's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah, because he's smooth. He's going to debut, I believe, at the next big show for NXT. Dallas, man. I think they announced it the other day.
Oh, so. Man, the roof's going to blow off the place. I really believe that, you know. There's, you know, the thing is that, as I was talking to someone today, there, you can't help it. Sometimes, like, New Japan Pro Wrestling is over here in the States now.
Right.
And you know, sometimes you can't help it. You're flipping the channels. Like, oh, wow. So there's an opportunity to see this guy before, you know,
you can watch,
NXT.
Yeah.
So that, but that's a great thing for WWE, because now people are getting a little bit familiar and get excited about this guy coming.
Yeah, there'll be some name value, exactly.
Absolutely.
Was it hard to, I mean, you kind of mentioned that it was hard to go, you know, say that you were leaving. Was it hard to kind of really actually, like, when you had your last match there and, like.
Man. It was, I'm, you know, when I was telling everybody how much I appreciate them, the whole locker room, as you know, you probably stood in front of them before and said, I'm leaving, you know, and I got a little choked up, and you know, looked around and seeing the guys that I respected getting a little choked up. It was that's what made it hard, you know. It was just a bunch of great guys, you know, to work with and work for, and you appreciate that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you see every day. So when you have to leave, it's really hard.
Was your last match the one at the Tokyo Dome?
No, my last match. We did Corgan Hall the next day.
Oh, okay. Well, that was it, though.
And that was it.
Right.
And the Bullet Club turned on me and beat me up, and you know, we did what's best for business, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it was, you know, it was a weird feeling leaving, but you know, only being there for 2 years, but it felt like I'd been there forever. You
because
know?
It's such a great crew too. New Japan kind of went through a renaissance over the last couple of years, with, you mentioned, Nakamura and Tanahashi and Okada, you know, all the guys, the whole club. I mean, it was a good crew.
Oh man, the best. Mm-hmm. I mean. I loved getting there when working with everybody. You know, there was a couple guys who you thought that, well, these guys won't mesh well in the ring, but, you know, me and Yano, who does strictly ha-ha kind of stuff, and you know, sometimes I'm hardcore. I mean, him and I had some of the best matches, you know, and it was pure entertainment. It was great. Yeah. I loved it.
Who did you work in Tokyo Dome? Tanahashi?
I worked Nakamura.
Okay.
So and him and I thought had a really great match. It was a real special match, because him and I never had a singles match together. The whole 2 years that I was there,
we never
faced each other in a singles match. So that was the big thing, that they had built this thing up for almost 2 years, you know, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
So that's what made it, you know, not only that it's the Tokyo Dome, you know, obviously, but to wrestle Nakamura in the Tokyo Dome was very exciting for me.
It's hard to work at dome shows, though. I always find, even here for WrestleMania, the crowd is so big.
Oh, yeah.
And I find the sound goes up rather than in.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely right. And they're, it seems like, I don't know why, it just seems like they're further away. You know?
Yeah.
Like I just feel like they're not close enough. I want to hear you, you know.
Delayed reaction.
Yeah. But it was still, I mean, when you walk out there and you see a sea of people,
yeah.
It doesn't get much better than that. And knowing, you know, the history of the Tokyo Dome.
Right.
You know, and so many great matches that have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And to walk that long ramp.
Because it's long.
Oh, it's long, but it's awesome. Yeah. It is awesome.
I remember one time we were in, Edge and I were working WrestleMania, and when it was one of those things, like I said, we're doing this really cool set of reversals, and there's just like, there's reaction, but it's not, I was like, does this match suck? Like, is this any good? And you watch it back and it's great, but at the time you're like, Where's everybody?
Yeah.
You know, we just have to know that.
Yeah. And the Japanese crowds are a little bit different.
Sure. They're more subdued as it is.
So yeah. So they're not as loud, you know, sometimes. But if you get them, their loudness comes from their, you know.
One, two,
stomp their feet, you know.
Yeah.
That if you get them doing that, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah. So was there some guys here that that you knew from Japan or elsewhere that you called and asked advice for?
You know, the only guy that I really talked with was Samoa Joe.
Okay.
You know, because he'd been he's doing the NXT.
Yeah.
But his thing was just like, man, the roster is unbelievable. It's great, man. This is the perfect place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and it's hard to imagine, you know, it being such a great place because it's so huge. And you've heard stories in the past where it wasn't exactly like that here.
You mean from a talent standpoint
I guess from a talent standpoint.
Right.
And when I'm talking about in the past, I'm talking about from a long time ago.
Sure.
You know, so you always worry about this monster that you're walking into and how everybody's going to be, you know. But for Joe to tell me that dude, you just you got to be here to believe it. This is the perfect place to be. Mm. This is where you've worked your way to be. This is where you want to be. This is where everybody wants to be. And they have no clue why they want it. They think it's just because it's the biggest part of wrestling that you can possibly go to. But it goes beyond that with the, you know, how people respect you here, you know. And you can't ask for much more than that.
It's funny, last week when we did our little pre-tape or live thing, whatever it was, and I said, welcome to the big leagues. And people were like, what are you talking about? AJ's in the bigs. I wasn't demeaning anywhere else in the world. I've been there. But nothing matches or beats being in the WWE. It's the WWE.
Listen, I told a buddy of mine, you know, like I said, I've been wrestling for 17 years. And he said, well, listen. You were in the minor leagues, then you went to Japan to play baseball, and now you came to the MLB. Yeah. That's what this is basically, you know, is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the biggest wrestling company in the world, and you can't – that's the facts.
Sure.
You know, and people – every time I've ever come through the airport, through immigration, from coming home from Japan, what do? Pro wrestling. Oh, like WWE?
Something like it.
Now I get to say, yes, exactly like WWE,
right, right.
Because I work there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I said that more people know who you are now than the entire other 17 years and 2 days of your career, whatever it's been.
It's amazing.
You know, just last week on Raw, more people probably saw you than have seen you your whole career.
You're probably right. I mean, just so many things have happened. Like, it's like, oh, he's on WWE now. Now we can follow him on Twitter. Like, I've been on Twitter forever.
Right.
You know? Oh, Instagram. Why, yeah. How'd that pick up so much? Well,
but now, excuse me, like I said, you're officially in the business now. I'm sure, like, you know, your in-laws or whatever, like, oh, well, you're like, now you're actually made something of yourself.
Yeah, you're actually a star. I'm like, oh, okay.
But that's the vibe here, you know?
Well, that's the vibe that gives off to everybody, because mm-hmm. so many people come up to me and said, hey, congratulations, you did it. You finally, I'm like, okay, I guess you're right, you know. And but it's a good feeling to say, yeah, I am part of WWE now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a great feeling. It's a great thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, and I can wear my WWE shirt and be proud, you know.
But you should be here. Like I said, like everybody that finally comes, like you mentioned, it took a long time to get here and everything works out the way it's supposed to work out. But this is the elite of the elite, and that's nothing against New Japan. They're a great company, and all these other companies, Ring of Honor, you've got some tremendous performers. But the best in the world are here. And there's so much more to what we do other than just being in the ring, you know, as far as personalities and characters and all that sort of stuff. So you're going to become a better performer just from being here.
There's no doubt. And the guys that I get the opportunity to work with, mm-hmm. you know, who can help me be a better performer. And that's what it's all about. And you never stop learning, as you know, in the wrestling business. And I'm all about that. I want to learn as much as I possibly can so that when the time comes, I can share that information with someone else and hopefully get them either quicker or, you know, to here or mm-hmm. somewhere else where they can do well in the wrestling business.
Is there some people here, like, who are you looking forward to having some matches with here?
Neville, you know, him and I worked a while back, and to get in there with him now, he's a totally different guy. And so am I, mm-hmm. you know, to get in there and wrestle him. I think that'd be really fun, but there's a lot of guys that I'd want to get in here with, yeah, or get in the ring with, you know. I want to get in the ring with Triple H,
mm-hmm.
you know. Some of the guys I was in the ring with them, but didn't really touch them in the Royal Rumble. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of guys. I mean, I want to get in here with the whole roster.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I want the opportunity to work everybody and have great matches with everybody. It'd be very entertaining with everybody.
Sure.
That's what this is all about. That's why I'm here.
Have you, had you had some interactions with Triple H before you came here? Were you dealing with him?
The first time I shook his hand was last Sunday.
Really?
Yeah. So it was, I officially had met him, but we had talked on the phone, and I was shocked and surprised to see that this guy who is turning things around in NXT and doing such great things was so humble. And, you know, and when I talked to him with our first, you know, first couple conversations, good conversations, ball business. And then we, you know, I think maybe one of the last times we talked right after Christmas was about Christmas and our kids, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's very you know, humbling to meet a guy who you know, it's family's important to him as well, you know. It's a great thing. And so I knew in talking to him, this was a great place for me to be.
How about guys like, you know, you see Arn Anderson walking around and Michael Hayes and those type of guys. Was that kind of a cool thing? Like,
well, I've known Michael Hayes, you know.
Oh, okay.
I've met him before, but I know Arn, but I don't know. He must be a ninja because I haven't seen him in here.
I saw him today once for a second, yeah.
So I haven't seen him, but, you know, seeing those guys who I watch, obviously, back in the day. It was pretty awesome.
You know? Yeah.
Even when I met those guys in WCW, very, very cool. Always good to me. You know, I don't know if it's because I was from the South or whatever it is, but they were good to me.
When I first came up here in 99, I looked at the card, and if it said, you know, like AJ versus, you know, Jericho, and there was initials beside it, and I was like, what are those initials? And I said, well, that's your agent. And I said, what's an agent? We never had that before in WCW.
Oh, wow.
Someone to kind of help you put together things. But, I mean, last week, like when we had our match, and Jamie Noble sitting there, and I love that element of it. Did you have that in... Well, TNA, you had it, but do you have agents in Japan?
No.
You didn't before?
No. Yeah. Well, they trust you to put together the best match possible.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, so I was familiar with the agent thing, but, you know, Jamie Noble.
Wasn't he great?
I've known Jamie for a long time, and for him to sit there and help me put together a great match, it was great. I mean, I really enjoyed it, him being there, helping me put this thing together.
We were sitting in the production office going over the finish, on the carpet.
Going over everything, right?
People are typing out their, you know, their schedules.
We're rolling
like,
around.
Can you move these chairs out of the way, please? If people only saw that part of it,
oh,
right?
Oh, right. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. How about, have you had any interaction with Vince at all?
A little bit. Him and I did sit down and talk, and we talked about this character that we wanted to see. So hopefully I'll give him – you know, I know this character that he's talking about because that I was him.
Mm.
You know, this guy who's had to fight for everything. And I'll refer back to when I wrestled in high school and college. I always thought that, you know, how dare this guy get on the mat with me and think that he's going to beat me. I take that as an insult. So now you're going to have to pay the price for being on the mat with me. I'm going to hurt you. I'm not going to beat you. I'm going to hurt you in the process of beating you. So I know that guy that he wants to see, and that's an easy guy for me to be.
See, I love that element. Was this last week that you spoke to him?
Yeah.
Because Vince is very, very, and you can see since 1980 till now, very character-driven, personality-driven. It's not that he doesn't care about a five-star match, but he cares more if you have a five-star personality. That's the basis of what WWE is. So I love the fact that he sat down with you to start talking about what a character you're going to have.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get that much from anything, you know. And so the fact that we're trying to find out what that is, you know, and I would say the character that he explained to me is very close, very similar to the guy that...
And he saw that right away?
I don't know.
Did you have a conversation with him first? Or
no, we shook hands.
Yeah.
And just kind of talked about it and... You know, he brought it up. This is the way you need to be. I mean, you're not the tallest guy. You're not the biggest guy. But you're a pit bull. I'm like, I know that guy. I can be that guy.
Let me just translate that from your southern accent. Pit bull. You said pet bull. You're a pet bull.
Pit bull. Well, you know what I mean. Yeah. Not a pet bull.
Yeah, a pit bull.
Pit
right.
bull. Yeah.
But I mean, that's what he did with everybody that's come through these doors. I remember, I mean, look at Daniel Bryan. When he first came into the phenomenon of the Yes Movement, now that didn't exist right off the bat, you know, or Eddie Guerrero, Latino Heat. Eddie had no character when he came here, but Vince found those little things and really focused on that to make you from AJ Styles to this more well-rounded character, which makes more money for everybody.
Listen, the WWE's not in business today because this guy didn't know what he's doing, right? Yeah, like he's been doing this for a while, so he honestly, you know, he knows what he's doing. So any advice from this man, I'll take and do whatever I, you know, do as much as I can with it, you know?
It's great to have the direction, too.
Yeah, listen, we've both been at other places, and you don't get that direction as definitely as much as you should. And first, the man to give you direction.
That's cool. Yeah, you know, just give me that one-on-one.
Absolutely.
You know?
You don't get there anywhere else. You really don't.
No, especially from, like, the one thing I love about here is you know exactly who the boss is.
Right.
There's no, well, ask this, like, everybody that you talk to has to go ask Vince anyways, and Triple H on down. So I always enjoy those one-on-one conversations because I know, like, I had one with him a couple weeks ago just to discuss some things, and I had an idea that he didn't see it the same way. When once he told me why, I got it. You know? Because like you said, oh, it makes sense now.
Right, right. When they explain their vision to you, you finally, oh, okay, now I know why I'm not doing this. I don't know. I know I'm not coming from here. You know, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're able to think about it. You know, when you're driving these long drives as we do, you're able to think about this for 3.5 hours about this character, you
right.
know, and the ideas that come up. And some, you know, And they can share them. Now you get the opportunity to share them with Vince and see what he thinks about
it. What do you think about they actually mentioned the travel? Like, you know, Japan, you get on the bus, you get off the bus, your hotel's there. And TNA was very sporadic shows. Have you been on a schedule like this of 4 days a week, 5 days a week?
Well, you know, I'm getting ready, hopefully, to be on the 4 or 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I want. That's why I came here. But, you know, just driving 3.5 hours to each venue, you know, that's a long drive, especially when you're by yourself and the show gets over at 11.
Yeah.
So you're driving to at least, you know, 2:30 in the morning. If you stop, now it's 3.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it sucks driving that, you know, but that's part of the business.
Sure.
This is, you know, what we do. And, you know, it gives us time to think about it. And a lot of times it gives you the opportunity to ride for guys you've never would have rode with mm-hmm. before and get to know them better. And who knows what may come out of that. I've made some great relationships through pro wrestling because of the drive.
Sure, sure.
You know, so I kind of look forward to them.
Is there some guys that you're going to travel with? Are you going to be on your own, or what do you think?
I don't know yet. Yeah. I definitely want to find guys to travel with because I don't want to pay for that hole in a car myself.
Right.
But, you know, who knows? You know, the Xavier Woods, you know, him and I go way back, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, TNA maybe?
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
He was the reason why I was the reason why he got there. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But
you brought him in?
But, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But we started in NWA Wildside back in the day, too.
Wow, okay.
So I've known him for a really long time. It was so awesome to see, you know, so much success that he's had. But more importantly, that we shared the love of video games. So that would be, you know, if I ride with some guys, hopefully it'll be, you know, those guys or anybody for that matter. I don't care who it is. I want to get to know everybody on the
you know, that's so funny. I just had him on a couple weeks ago just talking about video games. And everybody here, like, he's got his show Up, Up, Down, Down. And everybody is just video game. Like, Rusev's playing games. And Cesaro, like, everybody's into it. So if you love video games, you're already in.
That's great. You know, because I don't just love them. I'm addicted to them.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, man. Which
ones are your favorites?
Well, I don't think I would say I have a specific favorite because we'd have to be talking about these systems that, you know, because there's so many systems. I mean, I have arcade cabinets.
Like stand-ups?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have them in my house.
Yeah.
Along with pretty much every other video game console you can think of. And plus, when I went to Japan, my favorite thing was going to these retro video game stores. And shopping, you know, going crazy. So,
like, what would they have? They're like Atari cartridges and stuff.
Well, the Atari, you know, it's okay, but to have some handhelds that nobody has seen before, like, you know, TurboGrafx 16 handhelds, which was you know, I think it was called Turbo or something. I have the Japanese version.
Okay,
you know, but they're still very hard to get a hold of. A Virtual Game Boy, I bought like 16 games for it. Atari Lynx is a handheld, and then I bought like that and 16 games to the point where I walked in and it was very expensive for some of these items. And I was like, I'm not getting that. It's too expensive. And I went back to the hotel and thought about it all night long and went back the next day and bought every one of them. So it's just part of my life. You know, this is the, you know, some people, you know, have habits.
Yeah. Some people click cars or some people play whatever. Yeah.
Right. You know, mine is video games.
What stand-up games do you have?
I've got a 60-in-1, so that means all your old-school games.
Yeah, I have that one. Yeah. Like 8 Pac-Mans and 10 Donkey Kongs.
Exactly. Then I have Track and Field, and then I have a Neo Geo. Then I have a MAME, so it plays all those old-school games. But my favorite one is a PlayChoice 10. Now, you may not know what that is, but back when we were young, you could go into, before there were Walmarts, you know, department stores, and they have a Nintendo game that you could play if you put in your quarter for 3 minutes and see if you wanted to buy it.
Oh, really?
I have that arcade at my house. That's my most prized possession.
So you have your own arcade there?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes me and the boys, my sons, we'll go down there, we're just
play
some video games. It's fun.
Time Pilot was my favorite. Did you ever play Time Pilot?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I have my son playing that with me. That's old school, probably 1985, maybe.
Yeah, it's one of the older ones.
Yeah, it's just fun to play at those, you know.
My son, I've caught him playing Galaga and Burger Time.
Galaga's so good.
You know?
Yeah.
So
Burger Time's so stupid.
It's so stupid, but so fun once you start playing it. You know, I just remember being in a laundromat where my parents used to, you know, my mom used to go wash clothes, and there was a Track and Field there And I was play it and play it and play it.
Was that the one that had the spinning ball?
No, no, no. Track and field, you had to – it was a button smasher.
Okay.
It was the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember that one. You had all the different events.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
I mean, there was a track game where you had a ball that you would roll. I'm not sure which one that one was.
I can't remember the name of it, but I know what you're
talking about. What did you guys used to do on the bus in Japan? Was it a lot of video games? Like, let me just explain why I'm asking this. Because when I spent all my time in Japan was in 94, 95, 96. So this is pre-cell phones, no video games. It was reading and watching movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's they have things now like they have a Super Nintendo handheld that I was enjoying. But I got to tell you, man, I started reading books.
Yeah.
I just got into novels and stuff like that and started enjoying books again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so long bus rides, you know.
And you're talking long, like 5, 6, 7, 8 hour bus rides. They're long ones.
They're the long ones.
Yeah.
They're no joke. At least you're not driving them. But but at the same time, you're stuck in the seat, maybe beside someone for, 8 hours. It sucks sometimes. It just thank God for, iPads or iPods and, books and video games and stuff like that, because I can imagine going through what you had.
It's so stupid. It was only 20 years ago, but it might as well have been like the 50s. So bad.
I remember being in Japan in the early 2000s, and they were taking their picture with me with their phone. I was like, holy cow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know? And even then, I had to get a calling card to call home because our cell phones wouldn't work over there.
Right. You'd go get you buy them at the station?
Yeah.
You buy 10 for like 1,000 yen or whatever?
Yep.
That they've been refurbished?
Yeah, and
the Turkish guys would sell them at the station.
Yeah, you don't
half of them wouldn't work. Yeah. It's funny. There's an app now that I found last time I went over there. You can speak into it, and then it'll translate it into Japanese.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
Sure. I have that one too, and I used it, and they go, that's not exactly right. I'm like, well, this thing's pointless then. I just might as well try to learn this stuff on my own.
Did you try and learn Japanese?
I tried.
Yeah,
it's very difficult, especially having a southern tongue.
Oh.
I don't know if that's actually anything, but it was hard for me to learn Japanese, just the enunciation and everything is just difficult. I mean, it really is.
Are you going to miss those guys that we're on the bus with?
I am. Yeah. I mean, just goofing off and stuff like that. Yeah, it's there's just experiences that you'll always remember, and it came at some of the most unpleasant moments, being on that bus for 8 hours or whatever, or stopping at a rest stop and getting noodles and stuff like that to eat, some of those I'll never forget. The 2 years
great
that
times,
I spent
there
in New Japan.
And that's one thing you mentioned, like in here in this company, some guys are on some shows, maybe you're on, Macon and I'm in Chattanooga. So you're traveling kind of on your own, or everyone kind of does their own thing. And the only time you get to experience that is when we go overseas, then you get on the bus with everybody. And that's like old school times.
Yeah.
It's funny. I said something on Raw a couple weeks ago. I was talking about the Usos, and I said, we're my back of the bus brothers. And some people, because people want to complain or try and find shit and everything, was insinuating that was some kind of a racist remark.
Right.
And it's like, no. We are literally sitting in the back of the bus brothers and just hang out and drink and talk and shoot the breeze. That's what you do on a bus.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To the point where if so many people, like Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows would sit on the bus, and I don't know if they got bored or just they were going insane. I don't know exactly what was happening, but they just wouldn't stop talking about the same thing. And they kept trying to crack jokes about the same thing. Within 5 minutes, the earphones went on. I just had to ignore them because to the point where they had to listen to what I was listening to because I had my iPod turned up so loud, so I wouldn't have to hear them.
Right.
Like, what does he listen to? Michael Jackson? Is that Michael Jackson? They know what I was listening to.
Right. Just as we're winding up here, I was talking to Gato last time we were in Japan. We went and had dinner, and a lot of the New Japan guys were there. Okada was there, and David Finlay, and Cody Hall, and Carl Anderson was there. I didn't really know him too well, and he went up to go to the bathroom or something, and Gato said to me, he goes, that's my star right there. He was talking about Anderson, how great of a performer he is, or how valuable he was to the company. Once again, don't know anything about Carl. Good guy, good performer.
Oh, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Great performer. Family man, he's been, he went through the dojo as well.
Did he really?
He's kind of like, he was a young boy to an extent. He didn't have it as rough as some of the, the actually Japanese young boys, but he still spent a lot of time over there. He was over in Japan for 8 years.
Hmm.
So it was.
Wow.
Can you imagine, working there for so long? But I think, also for him, it was time to come home. But man, he's a performer. He's hilarious. You know, this guy is going to fit right in, and they already know Gallows.
Yeah.
You know, so both those guys are going
to. And it's very rare for them to bring people back. It doesn't happen all the time. So the fact that Gallows is coming back for a second chance, once again, he must be kicking ass over there too.
Right. You know? I mean, both those guys were. They're tearing it up over there. They're a great tag team, and they're very, very entertaining. And I think that's why they're coming back, is they're entertaining.
I always feel happy for guys like that, like you mentioned, like an Anderson who spent 8 years in Japan. That's a great, great time. But it's like you said, it's time to come work here.
I mean, yeah.
You feel happy for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was worried about him because I don't know if he was going to be able to make that decision. Not the transition, the decision,
mm-hmm.
because it was so big. But, you know, it was just the time was right, you know, and again, you know, they loved, we all loved what we were doing in New Japan, but it was just timing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like I said, the world is abuzz that you're here. What are your goals now in the WWE?
Well, my goal is to be part of this family, that I'll be a known commodity here in WWE. Bigger than, you know, this little time that I've been here, I want them to be, when people think about AJ Styles, I want them to go WWE.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I go through immigration, they don't have to ask, they know
right.
that I'm a WWE guy now.
Yeah. Last question. All those great matches you had in Japan, which one was your favorite?
Oh, man.
Is it hard to pick one?
That's so hard. I will say this. Tanahashi and I, it was the G1 tournament. If I won, I went to the finals of the tournament, which was, you know, Gaijin has been there before, Carl Anderson, but they've never won it.
Oh, Carl was in the finals. Okay.
But him and I had an outstanding match to the point where we had people crying in the front row.
Wow.
You know, which was... you know, I must be doing something right. You know, and I remember having him in my submission. You know, calf killer / whatever calf slicer, what we're going to call it.
What are we going to call it here?
I think we may call it the calf slicer.
Okay,
which is a legit MMA move. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. That'd be easier for people to follow. But I thought, man, I really got him in this hold for a little bit too long, and I was like, maybe he should get the ropes. I'm kind of pushing him towards the rope, but he saw something I didn't. He saw those people getting emotional in the front row. So, I didn't realize at the time, but then as he hung on a little bit, you know, longer, you could hear it. So that just goes to show what a professional that Tanahashi is, that he stayed in that hold just a little bit longer because he could see it. You know, my back's to him, so I couldn't see it.
Right.
And it turned out to be one of my favorite matches, you know, not just based on that part, but the emotion that we got out of the crowd from the whole match.
Right. And just taking the time there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that's the thing here, like with time cues, you always have to be cognizant of that in the movie, right?
Yeah, they just told us not to go for 30 minutes. and I literally heard 27, and I was like, we're going to go over. You know, I was like, oh, man. But we ended up going about, you know, maybe 29 minutes, you know, which is, you know, great because the match, in retrospect, you thought, well, that's only going to last about 20 minutes. No big deal. But the fact that we put time and you know, more character into that match rather than just the wrestling and the, you know, but the selling and the little things along with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what made it so great.
Yeah. Actually, one last thing I was going to ask you is you were talking, there was some rumors, I don't know how true it was, but I heard that you had hurt yourself or your back was bugging you. So I hooked you up with DDP for his yoga.
Right.
Now,
it's amazing. I mean,
unbelievable, right?
You gave me that text and, you know, and I got in touch with DDP. He told me to come up there.
Because he has a place in Atlanta.
Right.
Yeah.
And a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went up there and he put me through one of his workouts, which I wasn't expecting for him to take that time with me and do that. And it blew my mind. You know, my heart rate was up. Like I was burning calories doing yoga,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I couldn't wait to get home and get started on it. And stand up's one of my favorites.
I love stand up.
Yeah. You know, I could do that all day. You know, it's fun. It's easy. And it helps you with your breathing. A lot of people don't know that. So there was a lot of stuff I learned from going there, and at the same time I was, you know, helping myself out with, you know, some, you know, I don't know if it was, I think it was more muscle than it was anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
Just loosens you up all the way around.
It just loosened my muscles up, and I couldn't believe what took place within the next week, you know, how great I felt.
It's great in the Rumble.
So I got to thank you for that, and DDP.
We believe in DDP. It was funny in the Rumble. I was like, man, you're strong. You're like, DDP yoga's working, brother. Welcome to the circus, AJ. Welcome to the WWE.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be a part of it.
All right, always fun to talk with AJ Styles. So glad he's in the WWE, and I'm also so glad that our angle is continuing. This Thursday night on SmackDown, it's AJ versus Y2J2. from Portland, Oregon. We killed it the other night on Raw, and now we're going to take our feud over to SmackDown. Hashtag AJ versus Y2J2 will be on this Thursday on SmackDown. You saw it on SmackDown tonight, the way that it went down. The challenge was made. The match will take place. I'm very excited to see how it goes, and I'm happy to have AJ in the WWE. Thank you for listening. Thanks to AJ for being here. And thanks for listening to the Motley Crue Crewcast last week with Bubba Dudley and Dolph Ziggler. I asked you to weigh in on the Crewcast on iTunes, and you did. I'll share a couple comments with you. Gabriel Kraft left an iTunes comment that said, "Very entertaining episode. However, you guys didn't discuss the Crew record Saints of Los Angeles." You're right. I love Mother Effer of the Year. Saints of Los Angeles, also a great tune. There's a lot of things we didn't discuss. We didn't discuss Aleister Fiend. We didn't discuss the Nasty Habits, which were the background dancers that the Crew had on the Dr. Feelgood tour. That's actually the name of our group text. Me and Dolph and Bubba have a group text, and we call ourselves the Nasty Habits. So anyways, Gabriel continues, "I agree about the statements from the final tour. The band seemed not as into it as they should have been. I saw them in Louisville on the first half of the All Bad Things Must Come to an End tour. The band didn't play their best, but the show was amazing. In my opinion, they were firing on all cylinders during the Carnival of Sins and Saints of Los Angeles tours. Awesome podcast." All right, Big Bun 83 said, "Love, love, love it." That's three loves. And I want to read from another iTunes comment. This is from Pick_David, who said, "Have to compliment Chris for scheduling some great guests on his show. As in life, you never know who he has as a guest who may pass away at a later time. His talk with Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead was very memorable, and his follow-up conversation with Phil Campbell was heartwarming and heartbreaking." Okay, well, thank you, Big Bottom. Or sorry, was that Pick David? Avalanche 318 commented and said, "The podcast needs more Fozzie." Well, hey, I appreciate that. Doesn't the world need more Fozzie? But I appreciate you commenting and all the 5-star ratings at iTunes. Keep them coming. I read them. I love hearing what you guys have to say about the guests you like and the ones you like to hear on the show in the future. Plus, your comments and ratings really help us out. Help us move up the iTunes charts, which is so importante. Do you want to hear more music discussions with me and Dolph and Bubba? What do you think? Send us some ideas of bands that we should analyze the same way we did the Crewcast or the Kisscast with Frank Fonseray and Rich Ward from Fozzie and Kent Slusher from the Luke Bryan Band. There's been a lot of cool conversations. We've got a Beatles podcast coming up with Charlie Benanti from Anthrax. So it's another way I like to bring you guests and conversations you won't hear anywhere else. If you like it, don't forget, go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and hit the subscribe button while you're there. Subscribing means you'll never have to say you're sorry and never have to miss an episode. All right, thanks to all of you for doing your online shopping through the Talk is Jericho Amazon links. Don't forget, you find them by going to podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada, Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. No hidden fees or extra charges. You can buy just about anything you can think of on Amazon, and always and usually at the best price. So podcastone.com, Killer Deals button in the right-hand corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All my great sponsors are on there: TrueCar, Geico, Denso Iridium, TT Spark Plugs, DDP Yoga Now app. Don't forget, go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga app. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, we're going to tape it on Tuesday in Portland. You'll watch it next Thursday on SmackDown. Hashtag AJ versus Y2J2. Check it out, and check out the 60-second AP news headlines coming up next. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. And next Wednesday, we got the Cologne Cousins. Primo and Epico are going to be here. You know them as the Matadors as well. They've been in the WWE for a long, long time. It's going to be a great conversation with Eddie Cologne and Orlando Cologne. Huge, huge, long history. Their family's been in the business for 40, 50, 60 years, and they've been in the WWE for coming up on a decade now. The underrated, amazing workers in the WWE. These guys are very underrated, and you're going to hear all about the Colognes next Wednesday right here on Talk is Jericho. Going to be a good show. Arriba la raza, and yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.